And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where it is mid-July and the NBA is finally winding down towards when all of us are going to go on vacation. And before we get to the NBA, I just want to salute the Croatian national soccer team for giving the Low household and Croat and Croat-adjacent people all over the world a month of awesome, agonizing joy. It was the coolest thing in the world to see how proud my wife was to see her little country of 4 million people emerge as sort of the darlings of the world, and everyone asking her about it, and people that she hadn't seen or heard from in years texting her to catch up, how proud she was and how happy she was. Even though they lost, she wasn't so happy yesterday. And just even when I was in Vegas, whatever day the semifinal was between Croatia and England, all of the Croatians and honorary Croatians in the NBA, or a lot of us anyway, gathered at the Wynn Sportsbook together to watch the game. And every, you know, like Dragan Bender was there, players were there, coaches were there, and the scene was, I was sitting across from Nevin Spahia, who Hawks fans may remember as Bud's lead assistant for a couple years. He's currently the head coach of Maccabi Tel Aviv. He was Dražen Petrović's closest childhood friend in Šibenik, Croatia, and the game ended with he and I hugging and kissing each other and everyone jumping up and down. It was a cool scene. I just don't know how anyone watches soccer. It's just completely agonizing and stressful. But anyway, so salute to the Croatian national soccer team. I will be there in a couple weeks. I plan to pick up a couple of jerseys. And that's enough about soccer, because I won't follow it again for another couple of years. Let's return to the NBA, where you know, free agency's over, and we had one interesting transaction late Friday, I think. I'm losing track of the days, and it gives us an excuse to talk about a couple of other teams that are usually maybe a little bit off the beaten path, and that's the Bulls and the Bucks. And when I think Bulls, I think of the sonorous tones of ESPN's Nick Friedel. How are you doing?
My man, when you said agonizing and stressful, I thought we were going to jump right into the Bulls at that point. But I am
right
good.
Off,
it's good to be with you.
Right off the bat with the negativity, huh? That's how we're going to go?
I mean, it's like muscle memory right now at this point. You know, you hear the Bulls news and you think, oh boy, what happened now? But there's some hope here. There's some hope.
Maybe. I'd like to say that you spent last season on the Bulls suck beat, which means that you cover the Bulls, but lots of other nearby Midwestern teams that don't suck. And I would like to welcome you back to the a different beat, which is that the Bulls still suck but are kind of intriguing beat. Are you going to enjoy that beat next season? Are you ready for that?
I am. I'm not sure. It remains to be seen how long I'll be around the Bulls after the first couple weeks of the season, but I'm with you. I mean, at least we knew what we were getting into last year with all that, and I love the term in the sense that people would ask me what the hell I'm doing, and I said, well, as my friend Zach Lowe told me, I'm on the Bulls suck beat at the moment. But
sorry, Bulls.
But at this point, you know, if everything hits right for this group, there is some intrigue here, so yeah, we'll see how long I'll be in Chicago when the season starts.
Well, I said a couple weeks ago that I wanted to write about the Bulls once the summer shook out. I may still do that, although they took a while on this Jabari thing, because in a year we're either going to look at them as one of the NBA's sleeping giants or an interesting collection of young talent that doesn't have a guy. And if it doesn't have a guy, and Jimmy Butler was close to a guy, if not the guy, then it's not too early to start asking questions about, you know, where exactly this team is going. I mean, Chris Dunn's already 24 years old, and things come fast in the NBA, as another one of your teams on the Bulls suck beat, Minnesota, can attest to. So here we are. Jabari Parker is a Bull for at least 1 year, which gives the Bulls at least five, I would say, interesting and noteworthy young pieces. And Chris Dunn, aforementioned, Zach LaVine on a 4 year, $78 million contract. I was going to think of something other than contract to call it. Lauri Markkanen, Jabari Parker, and Wendell Carter, who looked wonderful in Vegas. So that's something, right? I mean, that's interesting. You're interested.
It's interesting. The first thought I had after the Jabari news came down, Zach, was who the hell is going to play defense on this team? Because that's going to be
Chris
a
Dunn.
Reason. Well, besides Dunn and Carter showed some good flashes in Vegas, but as we all know, it's summer league, so who knows what's going to happen when the regular season actually starts. But the defense of Jabari and LaVine together is going to keep Fred Hoiberg up a lot of nights, I feel like. So I think the Bulls are getting into it with their eyes wide open on how bad they may be on that end of the floor, but they're hopeful that both coming back, man, it's rare that you say that on the same team, but both guys coming back a year later from respective ACL injuries, they have a chance, if they live up to their potential, to be even better offensively. And, you know, they're going to score a ton of points. The question is, how many are they going to give up? But it is a piece in Jabari that I know has some people in Chicago excited, given his ties to the area. And for those that don't know, he went to Simeon, the same high school that Derrick Rose went to. So he still has a lot of fans in Chicago. But, you know, I watch Jabari a lot the last couple months of the season in the playoffs, and I know you did too. He really didn't play that well. And he showed these moments of brilliance, and then he just kind of disappeared at other times. And in the playoffs, I was standing there before Game 3 when he just tore into the Bucks coaching staff and was all upset he wasn't getting more minutes. So there are a lot of layers here, as there usually are with the Bulls, but we'll see how the gamble plays out over time. But it was a gamble that they were willing to take given their circumstances and their cap space.
Yeah, they essentially got to choose between, do we want Jabari Parker or do we want a salary dump and draft picks? I mean, they could have done the Denver, if not the Denver deal, that essentially the Nets ended up doing, getting a top 12 protected first round pick for absorbing some Denver money. If not that, then a version of that. And they chose this instead, which I would say is an unpopular choice among most NBA decision makers that I've talked about. Not all of them, but a majority of them. And some of that has to do with Jabari, and some of that has to do with the opportunity cost of missing out on a first round pick. But I have a sense that this was cooking for a while, and it took a long time, maybe a week or so, to sort of figure out the dollar amount, whether the qualifying offer would be rescinded by the Bucks or not, so that they could make it a 1+1 deal. I mean, the Bulls seemed to really specifically target Jabari, and I don't know if that's because he's just gettable and young and interesting, but it seemed to me, I don't know what you heard inside the team, that this seemed to be a guy they zeroed in on pretty early in free agency. Said, let's figure out a way to get him.
Right, and Zach, there's something else that we need to put in there, which is the Bulls, specifically Gar Forman, the GM, have a long-standing, solid working relationship with Mark Bartlestein, who is one of the top agents in the league. He's based in Chicago. I mean, every team, or most teams, I should say, have one or two guys that they really like dealing with. For the Bulls, it's Bartlestein. You look at their rosters, and they have a ton of his clients over the years. So I don't think that hurt at all. But as far as Jabari goes, it's the same thing that they're trying to sell with what they've got now. We've heard a lot of the young core. I mean, this is not a few years ago when Gar went out and said, we're going to get younger and more athletic and then sign Wade and Rondo. And this is actually, we want this young core to grow together and we want to see how good they can be. And so Jabari makes sense in that regard because he's 23 years old. They know he has some scoring pop. They believe that the best years of his career are still ahead of him. And I think they're also sending a signal to Fred Hoiberg in year four of his deal saying, hey, look, we know that you can coach offense. We sold you as this offensive guru. We've got a bunch of offensive pieces now that we're going to dump into the roster. You need to make this work.
Can I push back on that a little bit, if you don't mind?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not I'm not convinced that this team is going to be some sort of scoring juggernaut. And just because you're bad at defense doesn't mean you're good at offense. And just because it looks like you're good at offense doesn't mean you're actually good at offense. Like, if you gave me over under Bulls offensive efficiency rank 11.5 offensive efficiency. Now, you can play fast and put up all sorts of points and stuff, but points per possession, I would probably take the under. Now, it's not like we've seen a lot of this team playing, but Chris Dunn loves mid-range jump shots and was fairly inefficient at them last year. Levine's decision-making on offense is an absolute disaster, although he can really shoot it, and I think his pre-ACL tear shooting is more representative of how he will shoot the three than what he did last year. Markkanen is a teenager or 20 or something and is going to be really good. I love Markkanen, but, you know, let's see how he does. Jabari's okay. He's not like an uber efficient scorer. He is below average at creating for his teammates. He's going to need and want the ball a lot. And I'm actually, you know, he can create for himself decently with the ball, but I'm not sure how he's going to look with the ball in his hands all that much. And what is Chris Dunn doing when he does not have the ball and Jabari has it and Levine has it? And is he standing around and no one's guarding him? And the center position is how much is it going to be Rolo, who was quietly very nice for them last year? How much is it going to be Carter? Is Cristiano Felicio, the human gummy bear, going to be, involved at all in this calculus? So I'm going to push back on the idea that they're going to be an offensive juggernaut. I just want to get that out there, because although they're going to put up 130, I keep hearing this. I'm like, on some nights they might, and they're going to have a lot of lineups with four good shooters on the floor, and that's generally good. I kind of need to see it before I believe it.
Okay, I have so many thoughts here. Let's try to work through them real quickly. First of all, with Felicio, it reminds me, and this is an offshoot to just mentioning his name, but you mentioned a human gummy bear.
Z-Bo is the gummy bear of the NBA. I just disrespected Z-Bo. He's the gummy bear.
Mr. Lowe, I'm sitting in a game, and who the hell knows where I was, but some fan stands up and starts screaming, "Felicio! You look like a human Teddy Graham."
Okay, Teddy Graham, I don't mind. That's not bad.
And the entire press row lost it. Some guys on the bench were laughing. It was like, okay, well, okay, that makes some sense. Anyway, aside from the talk of Big Chris, who God only knows why they signed him for 4 years and $32 million, but hey. You know,
I don't know why they paid Jabari $20 million. I don't know who they were bidding against for Jabari.
Well, I was going to ask you the same. Was Sacramento coming in hot for $20 million a year? I mean, man,
I want Mark Bartlestein to be my agent. That dude is, and I mean this.
Doug McDermott. I mean, I love Doug, but $22 million for Doug McDermott.
Joe Harris, 2 for $16 million.
Oh,
I love Joe. I love Joe. It's not a bad deal. I'm just saying that dude. With a lot of agents, you see they have so many clients that someone inevitably is left out of the musical chairs. Mm-hmm. Mark Bartlestein gets everyone paid, and he found a way. I don't know what the hell he did. I don't know if he tricked the Bulls into thinking, well, you gotta offer something above the level that Milwaukee can match, because Milwaukee accidentally/on purpose maybe hard capped themselves and couldn't have matched 20 a year. I don't know if he mind tricked them into thinking Sacramento was going to be involved at that level. I don't know if he mind tricked them into thinking that it just pays to have a good relationship with Mark Bartlestein. But that dude, I want him to represent me, man. He's good.
He gets guys the money before the music stops. And he has for a long, long time. And that's why I said his relationship with that front office, I think, is a huge reason why Jabari's there right now. But Zach, you brought something else up that not only has me cracked up, but it's very true. When you look at the way this Bulls roster is being constructed, it's like, just because this is going to be like the tagline on the season, I feel like, just because on paper it appears that you might be good on offense doesn't mean in actuality when the pieces are standing there on the floor together and the games begin that you are really good on offense. Because my fear when you look at Jabari's game and Levine's game, let's just say, it's like, okay, one guy has the ball and he's going to make his move And then the next possession down the floor, the other guy's going to get the ball, and he's going to make his move. I'm not sure where the movement together as a team will be and how it's all going to play out. But in theory, the Bulls are banking on, you've got all these young kids who can score a lot of points. Let's just see how it goes. And this brings up another larger point to me in that Fred, who really struggled to find his footing in those first couple years, you know, Gar thought that that team could be a championship contender. They didn't even make the playoffs in Fred's first year. Then they're going to go younger and more athletic, and they signed Wade and Rondo, and that was a total disaster.
Who could have seen that coming? I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it didn't work.
Can you believe that a $48 million contract or whatever the hell it was for Dwayne didn't work all the way through? Can you imagine?
I wish I had been following around Fred Hoiberg during that entire offseason.
Because
you come to the NBA with this like modern pace and space offense that blows everyone in college, and the Bulls are like, all right, is there any worse shooter that we can get? Is Elfrid Payton available? Oh. Can we get anybody else that can't make a jump shot?
Oh my God. I look back, I mean, Bulls fans get really upset on seemingly anything Gar and Pax do, but in fairness to them, Zach, these last two picks with Markkanen and Carter really seem to hit. We're going to find out on both
Absolutely.
Guys even more this year. But
and I've said before,
hit.
By the way, we're going to make fun of them for Wade and Rondo. That was a perhaps inartful attempt to remain relevant while figuring the hell out what they were going to do long term about Butler and the team. And it was not artful. But it was also, and very intentionally, not 4 years for Evan Turner, 4 years
right.
for Biombo,
right.
4 years for Mozgov. They sat that out on the long-term side and were proven very, very emphatically to be correct.
And Gar deserves credit, and Bulls fans are going to be like, what? But truthfully, he called that before it even started. The only bad deal, aside from the Wade deal, which was in hindsight, just atrocious, but the only really bad deal is Felicio, who may well be the worst player in the NBA right now.
Oh, come on. Don't say that. He's got a place in the league.
Zach,
maybe.
He is horrible. He is just not a good player.
There's an even worse center on the Chicago Bulls roster right now.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. Who?
Omer Asik.
Oh my! Well, you know what? See now, that's the difference, because Omer, I mean, he'll be gone in a matter of months.
Yes,
Felicio still got 3 years left on that $32 million deal. But
yes.
Aside from that, before I get too sidetracked, because I think this point is important for where the Bulls are going in the short term future. So Fred, in year two, he gets Rondo and Wade, and it basically becomes, there's two sides in the locker room. Jimmy, who is still respected by everybody, even though a lot of people may not have liked him because of his attitude, but he works his butt off. And Wade, who really doesn't practice that much and who becomes hated within that locker room by the younger guys. And then everyone else. And Fred, and I don't know who the hell could have made that work, because the roster construction just wasn't there, but Fred just couldn't find a way to bring everybody together, and that team gets bounced as soon as Rondo gets hurt in the playoffs after winning those two games in Boston. Now he goes into year three. They're rebuilding. I mean, they're tanking for most of the season, aside from that stretch when Niko Mirotić comes back and they're rattling off all these games that still seem crazy, given that Mirotić was knocked out by Bobby Portis at the beginning of the year. Well, so now they're in year two of a rebuild, but they're in year four of the Hoiberg experience. So what should the expectations be on Fred, who's walking into this saying, well, I'm in a rebuild now. I never really had the players that I felt like fit my system the right way. And the Bulls, who are saying, well, you're in year four of your deal. Should we really believe that you're the guy that can lead us for the next 3 or 4 years? I mean, I think that's what we're going to find out real quickly here at the beginning of this season. And for Fred, I mean, I think he's trying to figure out, I know in theory, they're supposed to play offense well, but do these pieces even fit together the way they're supposed to on the offensive end? Not even discussing at the moment how bad they're probably going to be on the defensive end.
Well, Fred is like exhibit A of why coaches always agitate for more job security. And obviously that's all self-interest. That's all that is. But this guy comes out, hotshot college coach, has NBA experience, NBA pedigree. He gets the tail end of the Rose Noah Bowls with Powell and all sorts of, you know, conflicts about who should start and who should come off the bench. Then he gets the Wade Rondo interregnum that made no sense. Then he gets the Jimmy Butler trade where they tank, and now he has this. It's like the guy just hasn't been given. Now, I don't know that Fred has done a great job. I don't know that it's possible for anyone to tell whether Fred has done a great job or a bad job, because he's just been given these crazy different pointing in five different directions at once kind of teams. So I agree with you. It's a big year for him, but I also would like to, I don't think there should be a lot of expectations for this team to be like anything but really bad. And I think that's why some people disagreed with the Jabari signing, because if he hits on some sort of upside, that all he does is help you win four or five more games that the Bulls really should have no interest in winning. And then if he does look like he's hit every bit of upside, then he's at that point it looks like to be a borderline star. And so you have him for one more year, and then you're going to have to max him out eventually or come close to that. And so I think that's why the idea of a Denver trade, taking a Denver pick, is in the eyes of some people more interesting than taking Jabari Parker, because at least that pick can be something that sustains on the Bulls going forward in a way that gives it trade value. And I don't see how that happens for Jabari Parker, because he's either overpaid wildly at $20 million on a contract that you functionally can't really trade, or hits and is given an enormous amount of money that probably even still overpays him to some degree and is not a trade asset. So I think that's the sort of sustainability of that, of whatever that, of the asset that salary spot or draft pick spot becomes. I think that's fair. At the same time, Chicago just can't compete with Boston and Philly in terms of draft pick assets that you have. And I don't blame them for going out and making a talent play and just saying, hey, this guy was the number two pick. He's got some stuff to his game. We all know that. He's exploded. I don't mind it as much as some of the critics do, but I get where they're coming from, because I don't know how much he helps them short term or long term, because it makes he makes them a little bit harder for them to tank if he hits well and the sustainability stuff. It's a very interesting decision. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, for sure, and that would lead into another broader issue for the Bulls. And I think you outlined it very well there. What are the reasonable expectations for this group this season? And for context, I asked Gar on draft night, and this is obviously pre-Levine getting re-upped for $78 million, which, man, I thought in your column you put it very, very succinctly, in that there's still a 30% chance that he may just not be very good.
Yeah, he's just a bad player. There's a 30% chance he's just a bad player, with apologies to Zach LaVine. Now, that means there's a 70% chance for something else. And look, the sunk cost thing is all over the Bulls right now, because the Bucks decided Jabari Parker, number two pick, we gotta walk away. It's a sunk cost. It doesn't matter that he's a number two pick. And the Bulls faced some of that with LaVine. You know, he was the crown jewel of the Jimmy Butler trade, where really a year later, it looks like Markkanen is gonna be the crown jewel of the Jimmy Butler trade. But boy, we just can't lose that for nothing. It's hard. That's a hard choice. It's much easier for me to say, did you just walk away from it? Look, 19.5, it's a big number. The cap is going to be 109 next year, 116 after that, maybe 120 something after that. I mean, it's going to be 1/6 of the cap in a few years. That's still a lot. I probably would have walked away. I don't think he's going to be good enough to live up to that deal, but that's not an easy call.
Right. Well, and the other key with LaVine is, everybody can score in the league now, or a hell of a lot more guys can score now than maybe 10, 15 years ago. So to say, okay, well, maybe he averages 20 points a game, that's not the same as it once was, on top of the fact that if you're paying, at least in my mind, $19.5 million to a guy, you want him to play well on both sides of the floor. And, Zach, that was always my argument was I'm not giving a guy who is one of the very worst defenders in the league that much money over that many years. But aside from that, the issue with the Bulls in the short term, so I'm sitting there with Gar on draft night. They've just taken Carter. And I say, well, how do you define what is a successful season this year, not only for Hoiberg but for the team on the whole? And he's like, well, it's all about growth. And I say, can you grow by winning 32 games? And he's like, well, you know it when you see it. It's all these nebulous responses, which are a Gar staple. But the point is, I don't think internally they've still figured out exactly what it is that they want to see. I mean, obviously they want to win games, but if they make the playoffs, are you giving Fred Hoiberg a contract extension? Does that sell you that he's the coach for the future, that he's the guy you want leading your team? And you just mentioned Jabari. If Jabari has a good year, are you bringing him back for $20 more million next year, thus hurting your chances even more of landing a big fish or two in the summer of 2019? Are you still allowing yourself in 2020? I mean, the name for fans, as you well know, in Chicago, the name for Bulls fans is Anthony Davis.
Why is that happening? When did that start?
It started 3 years ago.
But in what universe? Why is that possible?
The feeling from the Bulls fans is that Davis is going to be unhappy in New Orleans. He's always wanted to play in Chicago and come back home, and that somehow the stars will align and he'll come walking back through that door in the prime of his career. But that's the name a few years from now that everybody's going to be locked in on. So do you tie into another piece, another core piece, in hopes that somehow, either by trade or when he becomes a free agent in a few more years, that you can land him? I mean, that's the whole issue that they're having. Like, you have all this cap space, but who's coming here? Who's ever come to Chicago as
Powell,
a free agent?
Powell,
well,
like,
yeah,
the museums.
Powell at eight, what was he then, 34, 35? I mean, Boozer, Holdat, you know, like he was.
Get that, Joe!
Yeah, I mean, he was okay, but he was never exactly what they wanted him to be. So they're in a tough, tough spot. But they've made these choices now, at least for next year, where, I mean, and this is just my opinion. If I'm Fred Hoiberg, I'm thinking, if I don't go to the playoffs, I'm done. If he gets into any kind of trouble early in the season, Zach, I think he's done. I mean, and there was always pressure on Fred Hoiberg from the second he took that job, because he was taking over for Tom Thibodeau, and his friend Gar Forman says at the press conference, you know, this is the guy. He's an excellent communicator. That proved to be not accurate early on. I mean, this goes back into Bulls minutiae, of which there's a lot, but the issue that I think derailed Fred early in his tenure was Fred tells everybody that Joakim Noah asked to come off the bench. We walk over to Joakim at some shoot around before a Pistons game, and he's like, that didn't happen. And so the tone for that whole year with that very proud group that just didn't have it anymore was set early with that choice, and it just didn't work. But so he struggled finding his footing with a veteran locker room. He struggled finding his footing with Jimmy, and as he got a much bigger ego with the new contract and a new coach, which is one of the reasons why the Bulls opted to send him to Minnesota and Tibbs. They didn't believe the Bulls loved Jimmy, but they didn't believe that he was the number one guy on a title team. Therefore, they didn't want to pay him like the number one guy on a title team, and they decided to make the move when they did last summer. So all these factors have played into where they are right now. But if you're the Bulls and you're looking at your future, I think there is an immense amount of pressure on Fred Hoiberg to make this group work in the moment, because if they don't work together, I think he could be the scapegoat and he'll be gone and they'll go find somebody else.
Well, if they think they're going to make the playoffs, Fred's in trouble, because there are at least nine teams in the East that are on paper better than the Bulls. And it's actually sad that you can only say nine. It's that statement of how bad the East is, that you can only say nine. But the Bulls, to me, are not in the playoff race right now. As for Anthony Davis, I have bad news for the Bulls. Number one, there are many there are at least a handful of teams that can outbid them on the trade market for Anthony Davis, unless a lot of these young guys hit, and not just Markkanen, way more than Markkanen,
right?
And Carter even. And number two, you know, if they have Jabari on next season, meaning 19-20, they're not going to have room for even – they may not even have room for a 30% max contract. So I don't know – and that be even beyond what you're saying about how Chicago has never drawn free agents. And we could even go back and talk about some of the trades they made that didn't work out that have left them a little – perhaps poorer than they'd like to be on assets like the McDermott trade and the campaign trade.
Which McDermott trade? Yeah,
I was going to say two McDermott trades.
Oh God, they were both bad. And that campaign deal. Oh man.
But you raised early on the biggest question of the roster, which is, you know, how are they going to defend anybody when Robin Lopez is not on the floor? And not that Robin Lopez is Rudy Gobert, but he knows what he's doing and he's a large person. In Levine and Jabari, you're not just talking about bad defenders. You're talking about like comedy. You're talking about Keystone Cops comedy. Nobody under 25 knows what the hell the Keystone Cops are. But I mean, Levine's bad. Jabari's clueless. Jabari has no idea what's happening on defense. And some of that is now at least a little bit of that is effort, because he started to try much harder against the Celtics in games 3 and 4 in Milwaukee. And it was like, oh my God, Jabari Parker figured out that effort is part of defense. He looks playable now. Other than those games, he has been as bad a defensive player as I've ever seen in the NBA. And, you know, we'll see. And he's going to have to guard small forwards a lot, because Markkanen can't do it, and you know, we'll see how much they switch and all that. To me, that's a much bigger problem than Jabari playing small forward on offense. I don't really particularly care about that. If there's a wing on him, he can post up those wings. Other teams would probably prefer their small forwards guard Markkanen and flip the matchups that way.
Right.
You know, he can punish switches in either direction, and Markkanen's gonna have to get better at that, and Levine's gonna have to get better at that, because teams are gonna switch against them a lot. Conceptually, it's interesting on offense in those senses, in terms of the versatility. I mean, even Markkanen ran pick and rolls every once in a while. There's interesting stuff they can do. But if you're 28th, 29th, 30th on defense and you don't have LeBron on your team like the Cavs did, it's hard to win. It's hard to win like on any night in the NBA against anybody.
Right. And especially now when seemingly all these teams can get up and down the floor and score. I mean, Zach, that I go back to watching the Bucks a lot last season, but especially you mentioned the playoff series and in those last couple months when Jabari returned, on top of the numbers that say he's a bad defender and the times offensively where he just wasn't having much of an impact, the other issue is that when Jabari would come into the game, and he wouldn't have that early impact, and he wouldn't get rolling. He just kind of checked out. And so when they would pull him out of games, and he wouldn't get back in, or would get back in and wouldn't really do much once he did, you just thought, oh, boy, like what's going to happen here? Because he was frustrated. He was in a contract year. He just wasn't putting up the numbers that he believed he could. But one of the reasons that the Bucks in their defense couldn't leave him in the game is because he couldn't defend. And at this point, do you want to roll the dice on a kid who you're just not sure what you're getting night to night on that end? I mean, there are still times when he can put it together and you think, all right, it's still there. Like, it's still possible for him to be and show the potential that we all saw coming out of Duke. But then there are other times when you watch him closely, you're just like, what the hell is he doing? And what's going on out there? And, you know, you've already committed to Levine for almost $80 million. I never thought that was going to work. But now you've got Jabari on this one-year deal. And when you have guys on this level with the way the game has changed, even in the last few years, that you're not sure whether or not they're going to play defense night to night, that's what gets coaches fired. I mean, that's how this works.
Well, and I've seen it written, and it's true, that they can solve some of the positional overlap problem by staggering Parker and Markkanen a little bit, and they'll do that and play Parker at the four with any number of their centers. We haven't even mentioned Portis, who needs to play at least sometime at the five. But I've also seen it written that, hey, we may see some Markkanen at center or Jabari Markkanen at the 4 or 5. Well, I mean, Lauri Markkanen's tall, and again, I he's feisty. He's got a nasty streak to him that I like. Those lineups are going to be lit up like the fireworks because we saw it with – they tried Markkanen and Mirotić, and I can tell you what the Bulls gave up in those minutes with Markkanen and Mirotić and no center. It almost – my computer almost exploded when I looked up the numbers. They're that bad. So anyway, it's going to be interesting. I'm skeptical that this will work very well, but the Bulls are interesting again, my friend. You have a semi-beat there.
Well, see, they're interesting, though. Again, they're interesting in the beginning because I'm with you. I'm not sold that they're going to go to the playoffs, and I think that if they start hitting some tough times early on, it's going to slide off of a cliff real fast because you're going to see that the pieces just don't fit. So in theory, on paper, they've made these moves that have people's attention and has caught their interest for the moment. But once the games get going, if it goes south early on, then I think it's going to look a lot more like last season than many Bulls fans are ready for.
Well, there's a nice dose of optimism to conclude on. We're going to call Brian Windhorst now to talk about the other side of this deal and some other stuff. Nick Friedell, I look forward to it's always a pleasure to see you. We saw each other in Vegas for just a little bit. I hope we run into each other soon, my friend. Have a great summer.
I appreciate it, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
We're going to welcome in ESPN senior writer, insider extraordinaire, TV personality, Brian Windhorst. How you doing, sir?
Hey, Zach. How are you?
I'm good, man. Still recovering from yesterday's loss, but...
I get it.
It's all good. Can't win them all, you know? Sports doesn't always... The best story doesn't always win, right?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like an NCAA tournament team that made, like, an incredible run, like Loyola Chicago, right? Like, the enjoyment of the run is what you're supposed to take with you forever, those 3 weeks of just, you know, bliss. But today, all you can remember is the last loss. So I get it. I think the memory of the enjoyment of the journey will ultimately win out. At least I hope so.
It was a lot of fun. It was also just... I mean, against England, it was so stressful that they fell behind 0-1, tied it up with like 20 minutes to go in regulation, and then it went to extra time because they missed some score. No one scored. And I looked across the table at Nevin Spahia, my Croatian coach friend, and said, yeah, I know I should be happy that they came back and tied it at 1-1. They went from losing to now having a chance to win. I want the game to be over. It's too stressful. Like, I'm not ready right. for 30 more minutes of this. I don't know how people watch soccer. It's just too, it's like playoff. The World Cup is like it's like continuous playoff overtime of hockey. That's what the World Cup is like. It's just like watching that for two straight hours. It's a total agony. I have a newfound respect for soccer fans and an understanding of why.
You were in Vegas, right?
For the semis.
Or how did you elect to watch?
How did I watch?
Knowing you were emotionally invested, how did you elect to watch? Did you watch with people you knew, or you watched by yourself? How did you do it?
Yeah, Nevin sort of organized a gathering at the Wynn of as many Croatians and honorary Croatians as in the NBA that were there for Vegas as he could muster. And so there were...
Okay.
15, 20 of us all there. And it was fun. It was fun. Dragan Bender was there. He had to leave at halftime, I think, for his son's practice or something. So he was upset about that. And He just was walking away from the game.
The Cleveland Cavaliers let Ante Zizic leave summer league early so he could go back and watch with his friends and family in Croatia.
I mean, I know a scout who, when they won the semifinals, started looking into the possibility of just flying to Russia on the spot and ended up not doing it. So I respect
that
the Cavs for that.
Truly a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Could
be. If you're Croatia playing in the World Cup final.
I mean, Croatia's legit good. Croatia's legit
right.
good.
And I know, but you can never expect to get back.
No, you can't count on it again. You can't count. If you're a Cleveland Cavaliers fan and you're 20, you can say to yourself, we'll probably be back in the NBA Finals a couple of times in my lifetime because the finals happen every year and the NBA is more predictable than soccer. But if you are a Croatia soccer fan, you cannot reasonably say we will be back in the World Cup Finals. Anyway, enough of that. Hats off to Hrvatska. Let's talk. I just talked to the wonderful Nick Friedel about the Bulls. Any surprise for you that the Bucks just cut bait on Jabari Parker?
I've never seen a press release where a team says that they jointly rescind the qualifying offer as the Bucks put out. I just laughed. I know why they did it, but I laughed to myself because I was like, all these restricted free agents don't realize they have a say in this. You know, because it's like, we jointly rescinded it. Oh, okay. I didn't know that the player had an opportunity to rescind any part of it. Jabari Parker's career with the Bucks took a huge hit when he tore his ACL for the second time. But his career with the Bucks effectively ended when he turned down the extension last fall, which I know has been reported at different numbers, but I think was in the neighborhood of 3 years and $54 million. Maybe there was a bonus million in here or there, but
yeah, I reported 354 in February after Kidd got fired, and I wrote a big Bucks thing. That may have been year three of. I mean, they discussed lots of different parameters. Year three may have been a team option. I know they also discussed a 4 year deal where years two and three were non-guaranteed, which Jabari was never good. They discussed lots of different things, but the bottom line is multiple years of in the 18 range is what was discussed and turned down.
Yes, and once that happened, I think the window of opportunity for him to stay with the Bucks was going to be narrow. Now, they had an opportunity at the trade deadline where they could have traded him, but I don't think they had any. I think rolling the dice on him having a healthy and productive second half was a better alternative to them than what they could have traded him for. I think you could argue that maybe they could have included him in the Bledsoe deal instead of the first round pick, but I don't know. I don't want to go back. That's a place and time situation. I'm not so sure you can reconstruct that. I think ultimately this summer, if he had been left with no options and he would have taken his qualifying offer, the Bucks would have been very happy to have him back at that. Other than that, I don't think that they seriously decided to keep him. And I think they thought that there wasn't going to be much interest in him. But as it turned out, the Bulls clearly made a very robust offer. The Kings apparently were in there. And I'm pretty sure that as the Nets cleared space, you know, they had the Jeremy Lin deal done, which is a different conversation altogether. But as the Nets cleared space, before they went ahead with taking on Denver's money, I do think they kicked the Jabari tires. And I think the price was too high for them, and they moved on. But there ended up being three teams interested. So the fact that that was the case, and none of those teams needed to do business with the Bucks in a sign-in trade, I think once there were multiple teams interested, it was never going to happen for them.
I guess maybe you just if the Nets really did look at Jabari before taking Denver's money, and that was another deal. I mean, the Nets and Nuggets have been talking since well before the draft about permutations of that deal that didn't involve Jeremy Lin going to the Hawks. Maybe that's why the Bulls bid themselves up to 20, because I don't know who else they were bidding against in going to a salary figure that high. And maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the Bulls, it was going to be some salary figure that precluded them from using their cap space in the season, so maybe it doesn't matter. But and as for the sign-in trade, you know, we ran into this with DeMarcus, right? I mean, a sign-in trade has to be at least 3 years, and years two and three can be non-guaranteed, but no player is going to agree with that. And, you know, I don't know that a team was dying to give Jabari 3 years of guaranteed money or even two. I mean, it's just it, – and there's base year compensation issues where his trade value counts for X outgoing but Y incoming. Is it the sign-and-trade thing, it just may have been a non-option.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, putting it frankly, Jabari has a very powerful and well-respected agent. And I wouldn't say that – under every circumstance that this would happen, because different players are everything different. But I think the agent basically said, hey, will you pull the qualifying offer so that my guy can get this deal? And the Bucks didn't see a way that they could leverage it any further. They had leveraged it as far as they could. They didn't see a way to do it. And so I think they said, okay, we'll pull this offer as an act of goodwill. By the way, they really liked Jabari. They liked him in the community. They liked him on the team. I just think that they weren't willing to commit because of the knee problems and because of the incredible high number that he was willing to get. And so I think out of everything, I think the negotiation on pulling the qualifying offer is the most fascinating thing of this to me, because you have two organizations that play in the same division, which means four meetings a year no matter what. And not only that, but geographic connection. So if Jabari goes on to the Bulls and has a rebound year, it's going to be in the Bucks' backyard. But you had a very influential agent involved, Mark Bartlestein, and, you know, you had a really positive relationship with the player. And I think there was probably some tense meetings within the Bucks to try to decide, are we going to do this or not? Are we going to play hardball or not? And they ultimately decided to do right by the player. Whether that's a good decision or not, Zach, you could probably talk to 10 different executives and get 10 different answers.
Yeah, and, you know, they do have a fondness for Jabari as a person and as a player. That's true. I do think that the chemistry issues reached, in the eyes of at least some people in the organization, reached almost a point of no return in the playoffs when Jabari started complaining about his playing time and other things. And I can't report for certain who talked to who and who said what, but I know this. If Giannis wanted Jabari back on the team, he'd be back on the team. No matter how much they signed Ersan Ilyasova for, which was a crazy deal right out of the box in free agency, no matter the hard cap, blah, 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 blah. If he said, I want Jabari Parker back on the team, bring him back, he'd be on the team, and they would figure out a way to make it happen. And I'm sure that a conversation like that took place. That had to have happened. That's how franchises just work. And so I do think that there were enough people who were ready to just sort of wash their hands of the situation.
Yeah, but I also think, to be fair, it wasn't like Giannis said, get this guy out of here.
No. That's exactly I'm implying the exact opposite. I think right. Is this a must? Well, I don't think he said that. Absolutely not.
Right. I think it was, you know, again, in the shades of gray that exist in the NBA, it was like, Giannis, this is going to be hard for us, but if you really want him, you know, raise your right hand. And he didn't raise his right hand. So,
that's just how it works. That's like this idea that that's just how life. That's how the NBA works.
But it's interesting. So we have two restricted free agent, quote unquote. Now the Kings haven't spent their money yet, right? But everybody else's money is exhausted. But the Kings have been already used by one restricted free agent, and we've got two restricted free agents out there. You know, we've got more than that, but two. Top end of the market, and Marcus Smart and Clint Capella. You know, Rodney Hood's out there. Who else is out there that I'm forgetting?
Restricted?
Yeah. I'm just saying.
There may not be anybody.
I thought for sure, at least two of these restricteds were going to get plucked. One of them ended up getting it with Jabari. And I thought two. I don't know. I may be one short on that, but I thought that the Bucks' big move of the offseason was getting Mike Budenholzer, because there was a time where the Hawks wanted compensation. They weren't going to let him out of his deal. They were giving him permission to talk with teams, but they wanted compensation. And then Bud got out of his Hawks deal, and Then when he got out of his Hawks deal, Toronto was interested in him. And so if you're Milwaukee, to be able to get Bud without having to give up compensation, I think that's a great win for them. And I think he will make a huge difference. Nothing against Jason Kidd, but I just think he will make a huge difference for them. I think they will be a completely different-looking team and a lot serious, more serious competitor in the East. I don't think they're going to win the East, but I think they're going to be a lot more serious competitor.
I am a Bud acolyte. I think Bud is a legitimately great coach. Isn't it interesting that, like, it hasn't really been clarified what happened between Bud and the Raptors, has it? Like, there was a couple days where it felt like, I believe he was in Toronto or they were having dinner somewhere and it was going to happen. And then it just sort of didn't happen. And they didn't have another external candidate. They ended up hiring Nick Nurse, who's a very fine coach and promoting from within. But it never, usually something comes out where it's like, it's about the money or it's about power or it's about control or whatever. I don't know what it was. Did I forget something?
Well, there was some dynamics that were certainly being discussed in the league about how the Toronto coaching search was going. Because it was Masai's, after all the trades Masai has made, all the signings he's made, both external and, outside free agents and home free agents. The guy's been one of the most prolific deal makers in the NBA of the last decade. He had never hired a coach before. He had George Karl when he came and left in Denver, and he inherited Dwayne Casey and kept him. And so there definitely was some stuff in the league, is the vague way that I want to put it, about how that coaching search went, and even the candidates themselves, about how the process went when they got there. There was a lot of stuff that came out about that Toronto coaching search that I don't have on firm ground. And they ended up right back within the organization after all that. And I also have an affinity for Nick Nurse. I think Nick Nurse has a chance to be a really good NBA head coach, but there was a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing coming out of Toronto when it was all said and done.
Bud better be good, because the hardcore members of Bucks Twitter, I couldn't think of a right word, are aware of this. But like the Bucks are at a crisis, not crisis point, but like this is a massively important moment in the Milwaukee organization. And that's why, you know, losing the number two pick for nothing is and is not what happened, right? Jabari Parker has torn his ACL twice and been an okay player. Some would say disappointment. Some would say promising. Not a cornerstone player for sure. And that's who they lost. They didn't lose a theoretical number two pick. They lost Jabari Parker, who they viewed as a sunk cost, and it was over, and it was not going to be worth their while to pay him a lot of money. However, there is not a lot to show for any of the drafts that took place before Giannis, nor is there much to show for any of the drafts that have now, nor is there after losing Jabari, that have taken place after Giannis. Now, I think Sterling Brown's going to be decent. Thon Maker has shown flashes. I mean, it feels like every year in the playoffs, Thon Maker is suddenly relevant again for three games after being irrelevant.
He's shown flying leg kicks as well.
Yeah. That's something. But, you know, they've missed on other picks. Brogdon, who was a great pick, is going to be a free agent after this season.
Let me ask you about that real quick. Brogdon is eligible for what I call the Josh Richardson extension.
Sure is.
Which is 4 years at the mid-level, essentially, right? So it will be like, am I correct in saying that? Is it about
it's,
right?
It's 100. It's like it's the league average. It's 120% of the league average or the mid-level, whichever is larger, I believe.
It's a little bit higher. I think it's a little bit. I think Josh Richardson last year got 4 and 42.
Yeah, it worked out for that class. It worked out being 10 a year. For this class, it would be a little higher.
So it's significantly higher than the mid-level. So that's. Norm Powell also signed that extension.
Yes.
Did anybody else do that?
And Will Barton turned it down and ended up doing better for himself.
Okay. So do you sign that if you're – I assume that the Bucks will offer it.
I wouldn't assume that. Now, But this, your question, which is a good one, because well, I think Malcolm
Brogdon maybe not 4 years, but I would assume they would offer him the extension now, considering cap space next year. I think this is a good time for teams to extend players, considering what cap space is going to be next year.
And there are not that many guys for whom not that many veteran guys for whom an extension makes any sense. Brogdon is one, but you're touching on. I mean, so all of these draft picks, some of them, and it's not fair to pick on a team that drafted Giannis at 15 and Brogdon in the second round. Giannis at 15 that's a career. I mean, there are GMs who go their entire careers. You add up all of their draft picks. None of them are as above expected value as that. But there just isn't a lot in the cupboard, and they traded two picks for Gravis Vasquez, which was like absolutely absurd the moment it happened.
Oh, I remember they traded one pick. I didn't remember it was two.
It was a first and a second that became OG Anunoby and Norman Powell. They traded Brandon Knight for MCW instead of the Lakers pick. Like, there's a whole lot of missed opportunity. And the bottom line is, Parker's gone. Bledsoe's a free agent after next season. Middleton's a free agent after next season. Brogdon's a free agent after next season. They overpaid Ilyasova, who's going to get into their cap space next. Like, they may not have any cap space. First of all, if all those guys are on the books as cap holds, they have none. Even if just Bledsoe is on the book, even if just Middleton is on the book with Brogdon, they have such a paltry, not paltry, but like 10 or less, or maybe a little more, depending on some things, as to not really be relevant in the stratosphere in which they want to be relevant. They've got to renounce Bledsoe and Middleton to have any chance of having major, major cap room. And then if they decide, you know, we're going to bring the band back together, then that's your team, because then you're out of trade assets. Bledsoe becomes too big of a number to trade. Middleton becomes too big of a number to trade. Brogdon maybe becomes too big of a number to really trade for anything huge. And by the way, you still owe a pick for Bledsoe. So, this is like Giannis is 3 years away, and I know they don't want to hear this, but he's going to want to see a path to 55-plus wins. That's what all these guys want. And that path is either all of the guys on the team right now keep getting better and keep growing, and the coaching is special, and that may happen. That may end up being the best and only path, because the other path is either cap space, which they may or may not have, or you strike a killer trade, and if these guys get paid, they're not going to have the ability to do that. I mean, this is a big... People have seen this coming, but we're here now. This is the Giannis pivot moment where it's either going to work or it's not.
Well, Chris Middleton's been sort of quietly available in trades over the last year. And I think it's because they know that in 2019, Chris Middleton on the open market with all that cap space could be dangerous. Not necessarily that you just lose him, but it would cost to keep him.
My understanding is that they've wanted a home run for him. Like what I've heard is that, you know, to the degree that he's been available, he's available to the level that almost everyone in the league is, where if you give me a killer package, then we'll talk. I mean, maybe we've heard differently. I don't know that he's been like available kind of.
Well, I've been making this distinction in recent, discussions. There's a difference between a player being shopped and a player being available. And unfortunately, in a tweet, it doesn't always read this clearly. So, like, if you had a general manager on the stand, and you had the prosecution would say, "Mr. Horst, is Chris Middleton available?" And he would say, "Yes." And then the defense attorney would come up and say, "Is he being shopped?" "No." "The defense rests, Your Honor." You know, so it's one of these things where the same thing's going on right now with Kevin Love. Is Kevin Love being shopped? No. If you call the Cavs with Kevin Love offers, are they going to hang up the phone on you? No. So that's sort of, and they're both kind of in the same boat, right? They're both free agents to be. Maybe they should trade them for each other. But they're both kind of free agents to be, and the teams are a little bit skittish about that next contract, and they're going into a market where there's going to be a lot of money out there, and probably not every team's going to hit their mark, and they may go after guys like that. So, but I will say this. I think the Bucks basically have a lot of guys. You know, Chris Middleton is in position where he's got to have a good year. Eric Bledsoe, he's got to have a good year. Brogdon, if he doesn't extend, And not only just, you know, because of Brogdon's foot concerns, you know, any long-term contract with him is going to be somewhat problematic. You're not going to be able to get insurance on that foot, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think you can. It's been red flagged by a bunch of teams, which leads me to believe that it will be red flagged by an insurance company. But Brogdon potentially is playing for a contract. Mike Budenholzer is, you know, under pressure to make them better. It could end up being a perfect year where all these guys are highly motivated and they could end up having a great year. And then you're like, hey, let's keep them together. So, I mean, it could. I understand what your point is, that this is a delicate moment for the Bucks with the Giannis clock ticking, but it could also pay off for them too. And with LeBron and the Cavs blown out ahead of you, there's a pathway where you think you can take a step forward.
He's good enough. He's good enough. I mean, Giannis is absolutely good enough to take a team that on paper doesn't look like a conference finalist or a finalist that far. And I like Brook Lopez. They've got shooting around him. And with a better defense.
Why didn't the Lakers re-sign Brook Lopez?
If you're asking me why the Lakers did, I mean, you and Ramona wrote the story about why the Lakers did what they did. Report.
Can I just say something really quick? I don't want to talk much about the Lakers. Do they intend to have LeBron play center?
Maybe.
Because KCP is your two guard, right?
Yes.
Who's your three?
Ingram.
Who's your four?
Bron.
What about Kuzma?
Comes off the bench.
Okay, so you're going to start, you're going to have a team that thinks of itself as a legitimate team that is going to start JaVale McGee at center.
First of all, that's two-time NBA champion JaVale McGee.
Fair.
To you.
Adam Morrison was a two-time NBA champion with the Lakers.
That's true.
Mark Madsen, I think, maybe won three.
It's all fair. No, these are fair questions. I don't want to talk about the Lakers.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. you were saying about Brook Lopez. I do think Lopez and Ilyasova, regardless of the contract, do fit what Bud wants to do. They'll space the floor for Giannis. I don't know for sure, but I'll bet those were two guys that Bud was heavily in favor. I bet Bud was thrilled.
No. I know for sure. Bud wanted Ersan Ilyasova, and he got Ersan Ilyasova for 3 years, not just 1 year, 3 years.
Well, 2 years guaranteed. But yeah.
Look, I mean, he's a good fit in that, you know, we saw it in Philly. He can play a passable backup center for a little bit, and maybe those lineups will be what we thought the Giannis at center lineups with Parker sometimes acting as the center on defense could be, but never were. Maybe that could work. And you know, they'll place a smarter brand of ball on offense and defense. And Giannis is that good. So I'm interested to see how they are. The ultimate irony of, at the end of the day, because we're about to be kicked out of the studio here, at the end of the day, I don't mind letting Jabari walk. I actually think it was probably, given all the circumstances that have led up to it, all the other contracts on the books, I think it was probably the right call for the Bucks. And it's not the same as the number two pick, quote unquote, losing the number two pick for nothing, but it kind of is, and it hurts, but I still think it was the right call. Give me one team. Go ahead.
Toronto Raptors. I think they're in the driver's seat for Kawhi because I think the Lakers have given up, the Sixers have given up, and with the Nets, Bulls, and Hawks spending their cap space, it makes it harder to assemble a multi-team trade. I think the Raptors are in the driver's seat, and I want to know, what would your offer be if you were Masai?
We probably don't have time to get into it. I will say this. I guess I would offer DeRozan, Siakam, and at least one first round pick. And I will say, I've seen a lot of snark on Twitter that the Raptors stuff is a joke, that the odds went up because of something I said on my podcast and you said on TV. I've seen it being dismissed. It may not happen. Most NBA trades don't happen. But if you think it's a joke, you should probably recalibrate your expectations. And with that, Brian Windhorst, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you, Zach. OG Anunoby's got to be in the deal. All right, have a good week.
You too.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.